This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Say yes to Pure Leaf Tea and free gas for a year only at True North Convenience Stores. When it comes to quality, say yes to the delicious taste of real brewed Pure Leaf Tea. True North stores are stocked with your favorite flavors like unsweetened, extra sweet, and raspberry. For a limited time, enter for a chance to win free gas for a year. Check the True Rewards app for details or download the mobile app from the Apple or Google Play stores. True North Convenience Stores. Fast, friendly, clean.
Hi, this is Debbie, your Blinds.com design consultant.
Oh, wow, a real person.
Yep, I'm here to help you with everything from selecting the perfect window treatments to...
I've got a complicated project.
No problem. We make the complex simple. And I can even help schedule a professional measure and install.
I didn't realize you did that.
Yeah, we can also send you samples, fast and free.
Wow, I mean, I always thought I needed a designer to come to my home, but scheduling's always a nightmare.
Not with Blinds.com. We're on your schedule, and there's no haggling, no pressure, no hidden fees either.
I just might have to do more.
Oh, okay, whatever you need. How about you tell me what you had in mind?
Okay, then. So the first room we're looking at is for guests coming over.
Blinds.com has covered over 25 million windows, all backed by a 100% satisfaction guarantee. Shop Blinds.com now and save up to 45% on select styles. Rules and restrictions may apply.
We head out to the North Olmsted Chrysler Jeep Dodge Ram Hotline and welcome on of the MMQB, one of our favorite guests, the great Albert Breer. What's up, buddy?
Hey, guys. What's happening?
Living the dream, although for some people the dream is Shador Sanders, some people it's Kirk Cousins. I'll ask you, though, because it feels like here, we got draft analysts say Shador to the Browns. We've got reporters saying here in town, Shador to the Browns. Is that just like a Cleveland thing, or do you see some momentum there as well?
And I don't think they know yet, to be quite honest with you. So I think it'd be hard for anybody to be certain of it. And I'd always be careful with mock drafts. I mean, I think the best example was, I don't know if you guys remember this, but probably like, I don't know, maybe 12 years ago, Ryan Nassib had played for his quarterback at Syracuse and played for Doug Marrone. And like, he got put in a couple mock drafts as going like 9th or 10th overall to the Bills. It was like 2012 or something. And it happened a few times, and then a couple people just parroted it. And I remember asking around, and like, I was like, I can't find anybody who thinks this guy's a first round pick, let alone like the 10th pick of the draft. But because there was that connection with him and Doug Marrone, it was like, oh, well, this is going to happen. And, you know, sure enough, you get to draft weekend, and I think he went in the 4th round. You know, so I just be careful of like cherry picking, you know, mock drafts. Now, I think Mary Kay said something, right? So she's somebody to be taken very seriously. But there are a bunch of people doing mock drafts who talk to absolutely no one. You know what I mean? Like, and that's not to denigrate them, but it's just the truth, you know? So I'd be careful what you read, and I'd be careful with narratives carrying you away at this time of year. I'm not at the point where I would say anything is certain. I wouldn't say Cam Ward's certain to the Titans, because I don't think the teams are there yet, to be quite honest with you.
Well, Albert, if that's the case, then what exactly do you think they told Myles Garrett? Because he believes to think that he knows the answer to who the next quarterback is.
I mean, I think they gave Myles Garrett probably, my guess would be, there would be a, if we do this, then this. If this happens, then that. I'm sure they were very open with him about their plans, you know, because you're trying to get the guy on board before you're just, obviously he's going to have to be a leader for you after you sign him to a deal of $40 million a year. So, you know, I have a hard time believing that anything is set in stone yet. And I think the Kirk Cousins thing is still out there for them, by the way. you know, I said at the beginning, I think they're taking multiple swings at this. I do think they're going to draft a quarterback somewhere in the top 100 picks or so. So don't get me wrong. I'm just not positive it's going to be the second overall pick.
Albert, you mentioned Kirk Cousins. About 4 weeks ago, we had two separate outlets predict that Kirk Cousins was going to be the Browns' week one starting quarterback. Would you predict that now, or maybe do we think the likelihood that happens is a little less?
No, I think it's definitely possible. You know, and the one thing that's tough about that for the Browns is they can't really control it, you know? And just to kind of give you guys an idea of where Atlanta is right now, I mean, ownership was involved in this, and, you know, they basically made the conscious decision that having him for 2 years at $100 million was better than having him for 1 year at $90 million, even if that $100 million figure comes with the second year with him as a backup. Now, I know a lot of people out there that would argue it's not healthy for Michael Penix to have Kirk Cousins in the building. There are a lot of people that still think the Falcons are waiting for the right time to move him. And, you know, so it'll be interesting the way to see how that plays out over the next couple of weeks. I just think we need a decision from Aaron Rodgers before anything. And once the decision comes from Aaron Rodgers, then I think you could have a couple teams that might not have otherwise been in the market jump in. And I think that's what the Falcons are waiting for right now, is to get clarity on who is and who isn't looking for a quarterback. Because I do think, you know, Kirk Cousins is probably the second most capable guy out there behind Aaron Rodgers. And, you know, my guess is there is a way to get him off the Falcons' hands. It's just sort of a matter of how much it's going to cost you, both monetarily and draft pick-wise.
Is there any way Joe Flacco and the Steelers have any sort of connection, Albert?
Yeah, I think there are some people there that would rather have Joe Flacco than Russell Wilson, if you want to read between the lines on that. Like, mm-hmm. I don't think going – and you guys watch Joe play. Do I think, like, you're going to get to a Super Bowl with him? No. Do I think in a desperate situation he can be an effective bridge for a single year? Yeah, I think he can do that. I think based on the way he played with the Browns, the way he played with the Colts, if he has the right support system around him, and it wasn't perfect last year in Indianapolis, that's a little bit of a broken quarterback situation to begin with, then, you know, I think, you know, you're looking at a guy that can get you through 17 games, and if you're good enough around him, maybe, like, compete for a playoff spot. I think if the Steelers went and did that, they'd be kind of spinning their wheels on where they were last year, though. That's the catch, you know what I mean? Like, and so what they're waiting right now is to see if they can go get the upgrade. That'll be Aaron Rodgers if they can get him. And if not Aaron Rodgers, I think they'd probably explore Cousins, too.
All right, because Aaron Rodgers is taking a lot of flack for taking his time. Have we passed the point where he's being a chotch about this, or do you think Aaron is just doing his due diligence and this is all fair game?
Yeah, I can see both sides of it. You know, I mean, on one side, it is a massive decision. And if this is your only year left, right, like if you made the decision, I'm going to play one more year, I can understand where, like, you'd really want to think about it and do your homework and all the rest of it. On the flip side, I think you also have to realize, like, that your actions are now affecting a lot of other people, you know, and affecting Kirk Cousins, affecting Russell Wilson, it's affecting Joe Flacco, it's affecting the Browns, it's affecting the Steelers, it's affecting the Giants, it's affecting the Vikings. It's affecting the way so many other teams are doing business right now. And, I mean, we're 9 days into this now, you know, like 9 days past the beginning of the negotiating period anyway. And it's not like he couldn't have done his research before then. So, yes, I get that it's a big decision and you want to think through it and you want to make sure that you don't make the wrong decision. But I also think, like, if you're Aaron, you have to realize that you're affecting a lot of other people here as well.
Were you surprised the Bengals were able to get it done with Jamar Chase and T. Higgins?
I mean, Joe Burrow kind of put a gun to their head, didn't he?
Yeah.
So I mean, everybody knows this. Like, there probably aren't two more valuable commodities in the NFL right now than Joe Burrow, right? I mean, I think Pat Mahomes, Josh Allen, Joe Burrow, Lamar Jackson, they're in some order, they're the most valuable commodities in all of football. So the Bengals have been down this road before as a franchise, and go back 16 years and look what happened with, or 15 years and look what happened with Carson Palmer, and what that, and the effect that that had on the franchise. And you know, I'd imagine, like, if you're Mike Brown, if you're Katie Blackburn, Troy Blackburn, you don't want to go through that again. And you know, I think Joe was warned by people, like, about the spending of the Bengals when he came out in 2020. And there were some people that thought, like, he might, like, pull an Eli Manning, and he didn't. And he made the conscious decision, I want to be the change agent. I want to be the guy that's going to come in and be the one that makes a difference and turns this franchise into something it's not right now. And it certainly looks like he did that over the last couple of weeks, because he got them to open their pocketbook in a way that they haven't in the past. And look, like, it's going to make it more challenging for them to build around those guys. But I can think of bigger problems to have than having to work around the contracts of Joe Burrow, Ja'Marr Chase, and T. Higgins.
Albert, if the NFL draft was today, what's your best guess at what happens at 1 and 2?
I had to guess Cam Ward 1 to the Titans, Abdul Carter 2 to the Browns.
Okay.
Do we have a should drop there, as Nick calls it, a Shador Sanders drop, or does he go 3 to the Giants?
So here's the thing with Shador, like, it's not that I'm like completely out on the idea of Shador going to the Browns or the Giants, but here I've come to view Shador Sanders like Bo Nix, okay? And what that means is I have a hard time finding scouts who've evaluated him. Not like, again, these are people paid to study this stuff. I'm having a hard time finding guys who think he's a first-round quarterback, right? So, like, that sounds bad, right?
Doesn't sound great.
I had the same issue last year with Bo Nix. And really, like, what I learned in, like, going through the Bo Nix thing, and I remember, like, man, they could get him in the second or third round. Sean Payton liked him enough, and he was a good enough fit where it was like, you know what, screw it. I don't care what anybody else thinks. We're not going to risk losing him. Right, like, we're gonna so let's just swallow hard and take him at 12 and let that be that, you know. I mean, the only other team I could find that had a first round grade on Bo Nix was the Saints, which coincidentally enough is where Sean Payton came from. So, you know, what that sort of I think shows is how important fit is with these things. And so, like, I think there's a chance Shador could fall all the way out of the first round based on what I know, you know, what teams think about him. I think he could also go second or third, and it's all about, like, whether or not he fits your situation. And with the needs that the Browns and the Giants have at 2 and 3, if they think he fits them the way that Bo Nix fit the Broncos last year, well, then it doesn't matter what anyone else thinks of the pick. But for Shador, it's going to be about finding that fit, because he's not a great athlete. He doesn't have overwhelming arm strength. There isn't a superpower when you look at him. And it was the same way with Bo Nix last year.
Why is Jackson Dart all of a sudden climbing? And I know you said don't pay too much attention to the mock drafts, but it's not like random people. It's Daniel Jeremiah. It's Mel Kiper. They seem to love Jackson Dart. Do you?
I like him, yeah. I think he's a really good player. Like, I think, like, they're – and, look, I know right now there are teams that like Dart more than Sanders. But, like, those are the teams that probably don't have first-round grades – that don't have first-round grades on Sanders, you know? So I think, like, what you see with Jackson Dart, it's interesting. Like, one thing that was brought up to me was how when they get in trouble in the pocket, Shador Sanders goes backwards and Jackson Dart goes forwards, right? And it's sort of like a window into the difference between the two of them right now, where, like, Jackson Dart, you watch him operate the pocket, it's more efficient, and you see him playing quarterback, where Shador Sanders, when the play breaks down, is trying to get out the back of the pocket, which worked in college, but there's obviously a lot of question on whether or not he's athletic enough to get away from people that way in the pros. So, like, I think there are some people that look at it and say Shador Sanders is not more physically talented than Jackson Dart, and Jackson Dart is more refined at this point. Now, the other piece of it, and this is going to, like, kind of sound counterintuitive, right? But, you know, on one end, I'm telling you that. But then on the other end, Shador Sanders played a pro-style offense at Colorado, and Jackson Dart played the spread at Ole Miss. So Jackson Dart's learning curve actually might be steeper than Shador's. So you're sort of dealing with all of these things where what are you more comfortable with? What's more essential to you? I think those are really the questions that you're asking with these guys.
Albert, Miles signs the $40 million contract. Then we have Terse, I would say, press conference last Friday. If the Browns go 3-4 again, could Miles revisit his trade request?
I mean, why not? Right? I don't know. I mean, I tend to think, like, I don't want to make anybody feel bad about it. Like, it's great that they got him done. I'd be surprised if it happened in the first year, but, you know, we've certainly been down that road before where the residue of these things can last and linger. Like, I think it lasted and lingered a little bit with Deebo Samuel, right? Like, it lasted and lingered with Russell Wilson in Seattle. Sometimes these things, when you go through them and you have to, like, confront the reality of trading a guy, right? And when things go wrong again, you might be more amenable to it. So I would never say never on something like that. And maybe, like, you know, when he gets to be 31, 32 years old, and you're not, like, and if you haven't won or you haven't gotten close to a championship at that point, maybe it is time for everybody to move on, you know? Circumstances can change, too.
Albert, great stuff as always, buddy. Appreciate you. Next week will be one step closer to the NFL draft. We'll see if we are shabooming or shadropping next week as we continue to keep track of this.
Awesome. Thanks, guys. Have a good one.
You too. Albert Breer there on the MMQB on the North Homestead Chrysler Jeep Dodge Ram Hotline. Great stuff with Albert there.
Yeah, obviously we have to talk about a Shador Sanders take, huh? He's never been pro Shador, by the way. We need to put that out there, but I think it's interesting.
I think you need to put that out there.
No, I think it's interesting how he wrapped it around Bo Nix, because there's a lot of similarities to what just happened with Bo Nix and Sean Payton and what would potentially happen with Kevin Stefanski and Shador Sanders.
I just felt you just kind of slowly slumping down in your Shador Sanders
That's just how I sit.
Just bad posture.
That's all.
Albert Breer, we're going to react to what he had to say about Shador, the Shaboom, the Shadrop. All of it in 5 minutes on 92.3 The Fan.
I like it based off the idea that I think Kevin Stefanski and Shador Sanders can be what Bo Nix and Sean Payton were last year. Takes a guy that maybe isn't the most popular quarterback in the world, but says, I can put him in my system because that's what he did a lot in college, and he made it work. Like that's the whole idea behind all of this, is that you have to get to a spot where Shador and Kevin Stefanski are on the same page. We've said that from day one. Stefanski has to believe that he can make him into the quarterback that he believes he can. The same way Sean Payton believed he could make Bo Nix into the quarterback that marched his way to the postseason last year.
I think it's really interesting that, you know, it's wild to hear everyone talk about any of these quarterbacks in a different light. Like, I want to say it was Albert who said, you know, Jackson Dart might be a little more pro-ready.
No, he said the opposite.
He made some comparison between Dart and
Shador. He said
Shador
played in a pro system and Dart didn't, and so there go easy. Because he said it was even sounding counterintuitive, because then he then actually gave Shador a compliment there.
So there were a couple points where it was like, well, but in this way, Jackson Dart's better. It's wild to hear everybody. Albert's a reporter, not an analyst, but it is wild to hear everyone have a different take on any of these quarterbacks.
Yeah, and that's what makes Shador so, polarizing is one way to put it, but he truly is what you love is what you love, because not everyone loves him, but some people are like myself, where obviously we go a little overboard with that.
Yeah, I mean, I think fit is so important that I understand that fit for Stefanski probably is the most important thing. And that maybe he's like Sean Payton. Like, Sean Payton has, like, this is what I want the quarterback to do.
Yeah.
Russell Wilson's a Hall of Fame quarterback. Russ didn't do that. He was one and done with Sean Payton in Denver. So I don't think we should dismiss the idea of fit. I still come back to the idea of, one, I think we're all projecting. All Bo Nix did in year one was completely usurp our expectations. He didn't necessarily prove a damn thing. It's year one.
For year one, it was wildly impressive. It's just he has to grow on that. It's not a finished product.
But the difference is, if he came in with a stock of Caleb Williams, there are going to be some parts of what they did that they're, that was good, but maybe it wasn't franchise quarterback.
I don't know. I do wonder if Jaden Daniels has kind of ruined people's expectations for what a year one quarterback actually even is.
Him and C.J. Stroud, I think so.
I think it hurt. I think it hurt in a lot of ways.
Even Bo Nix. Like, I don't know, just because Bo Nix fits what Sean Payton does and Shador might fit Kevin Stefanski's, that means that Shador is going to be able to walk in day one and be as good as Bo.
No, I would say, like, the day that if the Browns took Shador Sanders at number two overall, I think the next day would be me trying to pump the brakes with a lot of people on what expectations actually are. If you think he's coming in here and you're going to an AFC title game right away, that's not the reality.
Well, I don't even think it's about AFC title game.
That's what made Bo Nix so impressive.
If you think you're
going
to compete for the playoffs next year, no, I just don't think that's going
to
be the case.
But Bo Nix even getting to the postseason last year, that was wildly impressive to me. You know, we used to look at these quarterbacks, Nick, as if it was year three to year four. That's what we said with Russ, even though Russ obviously had a lot of postseason success, but like an individual standpoint, year three to year four. Dak Prescott lived in that same boat as well. Year three to year four was that massive jump, and you're like, here's when it's coming. And now, in the past couple years, we've just rewritten it to where these quarterbacks have to have like an absurd amount of instant success.
But I think what's interesting about Denver is Bo Nix was drafted in year three of that plan. George Payton was hired 3 years ago. Now, I think, what was that, Vic Fangio 3 years ago was the head coach?
Yeah.
Then Vic gets fired for Sean Payton. So Sean Payton, there's the second draft with George Payton. And then this last year was the third one. So much of the reason, and Bo Nix is a big part of why they succeeded. I'm not trying to say he isn't. But so much of their success was built on this really nice young foundation that they had accumulated in previous drafts. I think that's where, like, the situation to me isn't one for one, because the Browns just haven't drafted well enough. Like, that, my big skepticism is, yes, it is equal parts, how good is Shador really going to be, and can he be good early? I think those are two definitive things that I question to some degree. I question the Browns just as much of, all right, this is really, like, I think maybe I might even be more comfortable with a Shador-like quarterback a year from now if you can prove to me that you've had a good recent draft and picked up more pieces around the young quarterback.
Or at least the foundation's there a little bit better. Is that what you're trying to get at?
Yeah, I mean, I think you're a older, bloated roster with a couple of really nice players and a bunch of guys. A bunch of guys who are still here, quite frankly, because Andrew Berry drafted them. And you keep the guys you drafted because you like them, quote unquote.
Yeah, I know. It's just not the reality the Browns live in right now, though. Well, you know, I'm sure they wish that they had better players on the roster, too.
That's
it's just not reality.
If you treat the quarterback in drafting a quarterback as this is the only year you're going to be able to do it. Like, I think that is like the continued idea of it's not even about.
Wow. What's up? I just bought and financed a car through Carvana in minutes.
You? The person who agonized 4 weeks over whether to paint your walls eggshell or off-white bought and financed a car in minutes.
They made it easy. Transparent terms, customizable down and monthly. Didn't even have to do any paperwork.
Wow.
Mm-hmm. Hey, have you checked out that spreadsheet I sent you for our dinner options?
Finance your car with Carvana and experience total control. Financing subject to credit approval.
You don't just live in your home. You live in your neighborhood as well. So when you're shopping for a home, you want to know as much about the area around it as possible. Luckily, Homes.com has got you covered. Each listing features a comprehensive neighborhood guide from local experts. Everything you'd ever want to know about a neighborhood, including the number of homes for sale, transportation, local amenities, cultural attractions, unique qualities, and even things like median lot size and a noise score. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
Hey, it's Gemma Spegg, host of the Open Mind original podcast, Mantra. Every Monday, I'll bring you a new mantra, a simple yet powerful phrase to help you clear your mind and stay grounded amidst the chaos. I'll also share some personal stories, journal prompts, and a weekly challenge to bring each mantra to life. Follow and listen to Mantra, an Odyssey podcast in partnership with Open Mind Studios, available now on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
Well, there might be better quarterbacks available next year.
I see what you're
saying. I understand you're playing a little bit. There's a little bit of Russian roulette in that.
I see what you're saying.
But I also think a year from now, you might be better equipped to support a quarterback who might not be the most talented quarterback we've seen come out in the last
three
years.
Well, but again, this is where maybe Jaden Daniels ruined some more people because the Commanders had all of two Pro Bowlers on their roster last year, and it was Jaden Daniels and Terry McLaurin. And that all previous offseason, they get a lot of credit, but in reality, all they did was send away a lot of defensive players that were actually pretty good.
Now, well, and they also had salary cap, which you don't have, as evidenced by the Browns' complications trying to add a veteran quarterback. So I just continue to put myself in. I don't want to say that I don't think Shador can work out, because I just don't think that's fair. It's, again, I think that's where I like the Bo Nix comparison. I continue to come back to the other comparison for this is Baker of, do you draft a quarterback with not elite tools, right? Not a huge arm, not wildly athletic, like all the things that you go by physically that helps you project a quarterback's greatness. There's nothing elite with Shador. There wasn't with Baker. Are we just going to get stuck in that monotony of, well, he's good enough to be good sometimes, but he's not good enough to carry you? I think that's a real fear that I it feels like people, I don't want to say are settling for Shador, because that's not what you're doing. That's not what Ken's doing. But it does feel like people are like, well, we don't have anything better, so we might as well do that. That's not a valid reason to take a quarterback at two.
No, but I also don't. I think people aren't giving him, first off, the elite side of things, they're not giving him nearly enough credit for how elite he was with accuracy, because he is wildly accurate with the quarterback, with the ball. But the other part of this is, Shador isn't just awful at a lot of part of the game. He is good to great in a lot of different areas of the game, where I can't say the same even for Cam Ward in certain aspects and some of the other quarterbacks that you take. And I think having somebody that is so NFL ready and is so ready to go and fit in Stefanski's system, I don't know. I do think it matters. But this is why we've connected these dots for a long time, Nick, is that with Stefanski, this is the type of quarterback that he would fall in love with. This is the type of guy that should be very appealing to him. Everything down to the work he did with Pat Shurmur should be 100% right in line with what Stefanski would want. That's why it's just kind of mind-boggling if it isn't him.
You know what's wild about the Shador accuracy thing? And I'm saying this not to dispute it, but for context. Because, I think if you watch the tape, Shador is an accurate quarterback. But when people talk about the historic accuracy, what was the physically elite trait that Baker allegedly had coming out?
No, Baker was accurate as well.
It was accuracy. If you look,
Baker's very accurate.
At least from completion percentage, that has kind of been a bugaboo in Baker's career in the pros, as opposed to what a strength it was.
He completed like 71% of passes last year, didn't he?
Yeah, last year, but not for the first, what, 5 or 6 years?
Like, if you look at it, he was very good. He got there is the point.
He's got a 63. Well, but that was the anomaly. His previous high to last year was 64%, which right now in the NFL is low, and that was year one in Tampa Bay, by the way. His previous career high completion percentage in Cleveland was 62.8%.
Yeah, again, but in the right system, in the right context, he definitely did get there. Like he just was 71%, which is the top of the NFL, Nick.
Okay, but he wasn't accurate for the first 5 years of his career. So my point is,
yeah, but Shador might not it's just not a 3-4 year project, and then you just throw him off. Like, well, this is going to be, there's going to be growing pains, like we just talked about.
But I think my point is, if you say it's accuracy, people look at statistical accuracy and the completion percentage specifically and say he was accurate in college. He should be able to do that in the pros.
No, I don't think it's as simple of a transfer as that. I really don't. I mean, I think it's just a nice feather in your cap. It's just we can't dismiss the idea that he wasn't elite at something in college. You want to?
No, I just don't know that just because he had a high completion percentage and that was a historic stat that I should take that to be he's going to be 70% or 72% completion percentage.
70% also leads the NFL too.
Okay, 65%.
I mean, we're talking about growing pains, are we not? Like, are you going to allow Shador, if he's not a 68% completion percentage in year one or two, to grow?
I don't need him to throw for 5,000 yards his rookie year. I don't need him to throw for 40 touchdowns. Do I need to see accuracy from Shador year one? Yeah, that is the alleged trait that is supposed to be elite.
So we'd hope that he does better than Baker Mayfield with Hugh Jackson as his head coach, and then Freddie Kitchens in year two as his head coach.
And then Kevin Stefanski in year three.
Oh, but again, but like the first 2 years of Baker's entry point was really bad head coaches in my mind that didn't even know what to do with Baker.
216-474-0092. After hearing Albert, how do we feel about the latest shaboom? We also have to get to Albert's comments about the Browns with the number 2 pick, and if the draft were tomorrow, where he leans with that. That's coming up in 5 minutes on 92.3 The Fan. Preseason power rankings in baseball.
Yeah.
Never really seem to kind of annoy me one way or another. They never cease to annoy me in one way or another.
Well, yeah. I mean, they always put the Guardians next to really bad teams.
So it's not. I mean, it's not just that. Like they somebody I can't remember. Oh, they picked. Oh, so that was a lot.
That was a lot.
The Athletic has their power rankings.
We'll take a breath. Yeah,
we got it. They've got the Diamondbacks fourth. Why?
Well, they
best added, team in baseball.
They added a 30 home run a year hitter in Josh Naylor. It's the starting rotation.
I mean, I don't mind it being top 12, fourth. Like, look at the other teams that are around them. I mean, no offense to Arizona, but, like, why fourth?
That's what made me mad is I looked around the other teams that were on the Guardians, and the only thing that I saw there, I didn't even, honestly, I swear to God, I didn't even look to see who the top five was.
So
I figured it was Dodgers by a million, and then I just kind of stopped.
It actually was Dodgers by a million. Yeah, so it goes Dodgers, Braves, okay, Diamondbacks were third.
Wow.
Ahead of the Phillies, ahead of the Mets. We didn't get our first AL team until the Red Sox at six, which is not great. Then the Yankees, then the Astros. And I get it. Like, this could be a year where, like, 94 games wins you the best record in the AL.
Yeah. Devers wanting a trade out of Boston is the... If that was the football world, they would be ablaze with that conversation.
Guardians should trade for him. But... So I'm glad you mentioned, though, the Guardians, but I'm going to call disrespect, because there's a glut of teams that are small market teams. They're all kind of run the same way.
Yeah.
That start with 13. It's San Diego. Then you go Tampa Bay at 14. Then
San Diego spends a bunch of money, though.
Well, no, they do, but in terms of how they're run, like in that market, they spend a bunch of money. They're pretty much still a small market team because they're in a division with the Dodgers. Right.
I mean, by comparison, everyone doesn't spend money by the Dodgers, but
this to me is where they should have the Guardians. If you don't think they're going to be, I don't know, one of the four teams left standing. Yeah. Okay. That makes sense. They traded Josh Naylor, Jimenez. They still are, fiscally challenged, as it were. But the Twins have a 62% playoff odds, according to this, and they're 16th ahead of the Guardians.
Yeah, Nick, there's a conclusion I came to where I feel like the Guardians are just never going to get the benefit of the doubt, which is astounding to me. But like last year, for instance, remember it was me and you at the station last year, the only ones that had any belief in the Guardians, mm-hmm. even won a burger bet with Daryl based off of it.
And, it was delicious.
But it wasn't necessarily backed into who their opening day roster was.
Yeah.
And this year it won't be that same way either. I can never look at the Guardians opening day roster and be like, juggernaut. Haven't since 2017, okay? It's been a while. But you know they're going to make little additions here and there based off of who their AAA and their farm system is. And they're always going to have arms and the bullpen's always going to be good. They play incredible defense as well. And they're just a recipe for winning baseball. It doesn't mean they're 95 wins, but it's enough to go ahead and not be 21st in baseball.
I just don't get the gap between them and the Rays. To me, it's the same team, the same. And I know it's different philosophies because each organization is unique, but the Rays play in a tougher division. I think the Rays roster has as many questions as the Guardians does. And it's a little... Honestly, I don't think the Rays should be top 12 because they don't even know how Tropicana Field's going to play this year.
And that's a good point. But the difference here is that they get the benefit of the doubt.
Yeah.
Why do the Rays get the benefit of the doubt, but the Guardians don't in any of these baseball conversations?
Is this one of the cases where the Central Division hurts the Guardians because nobody watches the Central Division?
Or because we play a bunch of slappies downgraded?
Whereas the Rays go up against the Orioles and the Blue Jays and the Yankees and Red Sox, who dominate a lot of baseball's coverage, right?
Been a while since you named the divisions there, huh?
Took me a minute.
You got it, though.
You know why? Because I started with the Blue Jays. But no, I mean, it's so funny. Like, I don't know whether the Guardians are going to be a 94-win team or an 86-win team. But I think that's kind of where they're playing. Maybe
projections
84.
Right now have them at 82.5.
Yeah.
I mean, I read your fan graphs the other day. It was like 78.5. Like, we're back in that same... And listen, last year, people wanted to doubt the Guardians. They could at least do the podcast, and they could write their articles and be like, I don't know what this team is going to be without Terry Francona. And I didn't have any response to it. I was like, all right, fine. Maybe you make a good point. Maybe Vogt won't know what to do with the clubhouse. He won't know what to do with the locker room. And he won't know how to manage a game. But in 1 month, he showed that wasn't accurate.
Well, and listen, I don't expect the Guardians to have the fast start that they had last year. where by June it was like, are we just going to run away with the number one seed?
Yeah, it was a ridiculous start. They were on pace to win 105 games for the majority of the year.
And listen, it wouldn't surprise me if they stumbled a little out of the gates. Like, I think that lineup is still a work in progress. I don't know who starts the season at second base is going to finish the season. Actually, I don't know. They're going to make an all-star break at second base.
Right field, you can say the same statement.
Same thing. And even if it's the same two guys, what's the ratio on when they're playing and when they're not? Because if Jhonkensi Noel hits, he's going to see a lot more time because of the power than Will Brennan.
So, I mean, like, realistically, we got third base, left field, and first base. Basically sharpied in, and even with first base, that can be a question with Santana's age.
Well, and Manzardo, David Fry's kind of
I mean, it's going to be a mix and match.
So, like, I look back and listen. I understand that the Guardians are hard to project. Totally get that. But the idea that analysts think they're going to be one of the 10 worst teams in baseball, they subtracted a nice power hitter and a Gold Glove second baseman who gave you nothing offensively. Like, they subtracted a black hole at the number two spot in the lineup. I don't know you get that much worse even if you are subtracting Gold Glove defense.
They did get smart. They were hitting him in as in like the seventh spot a lot of last year.
Yeah. And it sucks. That if that kid hits, I really do think it takes so much pressure off the rest of the lineup.
I saw him hit a homer yesterday in spring training and he ran around the bases and then he like gave what are we calling this? I call it something different than you do.
That's the dap.
The
dap? Dap it up, yeah. Or hit the rock.
I always say pound it, but that's apparently not appropriate.
No.
Anyway, he did that to his little kid. He dapped him up and was like, it was very cute. Like, he ran around the bases and then dapped up his little kid. It was adorable.
Took my breath away there for a second. I thought you were going to say it. And then
easy
say
now.
It.
Easy now.
I don't know what.
This isn't an episode of White Lotus. We leave incest at the front door.
Do the Guardians deserve more of the benefit of the doubt than the Athletic ranking them 21st in the preseason power rankings? Again, it would not surprise me if the rotation's a work in progress, your lineup's a work in progress. It might take 40 or 50 games to find either one of those things, but across 162, the Guardians organization just consistently plucks out and puts out good teams.
Yeah, I'm not even saying I believe in this team and they're going to win the AL Central or anything crazy like that.
They could be an 86-win team and miss the playoffs.
Could happen. They've just earned the benefit of the doubt in these conversations from big baseball.
The lead coming up in 5 minutes on 92.3 The Fan.